I get myself in trouble every now and then for saying something maybe I should have left unsaid. But several years ago, was working with a congregation, and one of the men there, actually a family came there after we had started the work there, and a couple came there, and the man of the couple, he was not exceptionally tall. And as was it, some people say I'm height challenged, you know, but he was not exceptionally tall. And after knowing him several weeks, maybe even a few months, I made some little wisecrack, you know, about height or something like that in regard to him. And he just sort of looked at me and he said, you know, Randy Newman wrote that song, Short People Got No Reason to Live. He said, I hate that song. And I kind of knew, okay, never cross that line again. Because he is too sensitive about it. So, but at any rate, we want to talk about a short man tonight. And you find him in Luke chapter 19, a man named Zacchaeus. And while there may have been some jokes about his height during his lifetime or something like that, I'm not aware of what any of them were. But in Luke chapter 19, we read his story. And just this one somewhat short, I didn't mean to say that really, but this one condensed account in Luke chapter 19, where we begin reading, if you will follow along, at verse 1. Then Jesus entered and passed through Jericho. Now behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, who was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. And he sought to see who Jesus was, but could not because of the crowd, for he was of short stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was going to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and saw him and said to him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must stay in your house. So he made haste, and he came down and received him joyfully. But when they saw it, they all complained, saying, he has gone to be a guest with a man who is a sinner. Then Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, look, Lord, I give half of my goods to the poor, and if I have taken anything from anyone by false accusation, I restore fourfold. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost. This is a story that we are extremely, extremely familiar with. In fact, we have probably known this story since childhood very well. And it rings a chord with us, I know, on so many different levels. But tonight, we want to think about it from the standpoint of Zacchaeus and the great things that happened to him because of this encounter with Jesus and his response to the things that Jesus did for him. It is my understanding, based on some information that I've read, that Jericho was a very wealthy place at this time, and that it was a great place to collect taxes because of the money and the resources that were there, and that you could do very well if that was your profession. And we have to even step a little further back to understand the background of why this profession even existed in tax collecting, because it wasn't about the tax collecting that the Jews had under their law for the temple and the civil law and so on, because at this point in time, the Roman government was in control and they were in charge of the civil government. So taxes were collected and excised by the Roman government on all people. And obviously, if the governmental power collecting the taxes was an oppressing power, was one that you were not a member of that nation, you were not fond of that nation, then you could see the resentment and all the negative things that you could say about collecting taxes. Well, the Romans still collected those taxes from all people of all places where they had dominion, which was basically most of the known world at that time. So they collected it from those Jews who lived in Judea. The Jews did not really appreciate having to pay taxes to this other nation, really any no nation appreciated it on any level. But the Jews were also sometimes doubly upset about this because the Romans would hire a Jew to do the tax collecting. And there were plenty of Jews out there who were willing to compromise, I guess you might say, and make this agreement and this deal with the Roman government and to kind of appear, at least, to turn their back on their fellow Jewish man and collect the taxes for the Romans. They were obviously much hated. They were regarded very, very sorely by their fellow Jews. And the deal was, the Romans did not have a lot of strict ethical attachments to the job, because as long as the man who collected the taxes gave the Roman official the amount that he was supposed to give him, that's all the Roman cared about. So if the Jewish individual wanted to collect more and keep the extra, that was certainly fine with the Romans. That's basically how he made his money. And so many of the tax collectors, not all, but many of the tax collectors were very unscrupulous, very dishonest, and that made them hated even all the more. Now, the text does not tell us whether Zacchaeus was unscrupulous, unethical, and dishonest or not. It simply presents him as a tax collector. It does say that he was rich. The opinion of the crowd and many of those Jews who reacted to Jesus going to dine with Zacchaeus is that Zacchaeus was a sinner. Now remember, these are Jews speaking of one of their fellow Jews. And so they're accusing him of being unscrupulous, unethical, a sinner. And then we also see from the text that in verse 8 that Zacchaeus does mention there the possibility that he had done some ethical things, that he had done some unscrupulous things. And Jesus eventually, you know, says, well, salvation has come to this house today. Not previously, but today it is now here. These things seem to lend a little bit of weight and seem to tilt the idea toward the fact that maybe Zacchaeus was not the most ethical. Maybe he was not the most scrupulous. Maybe he was not the most honest. But again, the text does not directly say that. So I don't want to say something that or imply something that is not directly there. But it does seem to lean toward that direction when you take several of the pieces of evidence and you put them together. Matthew was also a tax collector who became a disciple of Jesus and an apostle. And there's nothing said about his nature as far as the ethics and his scruples on the job, but Jesus selected him, picked him, and he was an upright, outstanding man, which seems to lean toward the fact that maybe he was one of the few honest tax collectors that existed, even though he still would have been looked down upon by his fellow Jews and not regarded very highly for the job that he had. Well, that kind of gives us all a background of what's going on, and I think it's safe to say that regardless of if Zacchaeus had been completely dishonest, although it seems to imply that he was, he did not have the best of reputations because he was a tax collector. And then you notice the people say, he's a sinner. He's not a good man. He's perhaps they're talking about him not being an honest man and so on. But Zacchaeus hears that Jesus is in town. And on this day, things will change dramatically for this man and for his future. Now, the approach that we're going to take, and having all that background information now, here's the approach we're going to take. First, we're going to think about his downfall, what potentially was his downfall for Zacchaeus. And then we're going to think about him climbing up, and then we're going to think about him coming down. So let's think about his downfall. If there was a downfall that we can say that Zacchaeus had, it would have been wealth. It would have been riches. That is not to say that wealth in and of itself is evil. That is not to say that riches in and of themselves are evil, because they are not. They can be used to do many good and righteous things. But we know from 1 Timothy chapter 6 that the Bible tells us it is not money that is the root of all evil, but what? The love of money. The trust and faith and hope and confidence and love that man puts into material things that is the problem. And it is very possible that because Zacchaeus was rich, it is very possible that because apparently salvation was not at his house before this day, that he was too wrapped up in his riches. And this, of course, would have been and was at the time his downfall. The text tells us not only that he was a tax collector, but what? A chief tax collector. So he could have been taking his cut out of what he was doing, and then maybe a cut from all those who were underlings in his administration. Whatever the reason and whatever the cause, he'd accumulated a great deal of wealth. And maybe the more he accumulated, the greater the temptation was to be dishonest, to be unethical, and to accumulate even more. And it became perhaps a vicious cycle for him. The Jews, of course, would have considered him a traitor. They considered him and called him a sinner. But it seems very obvious that if this was indeed Zacchaeus' downfall, which it appears at least very heavily that it was, he still realized his life was incomplete. He had wealth. He had all the things apparently that money could buy and the influence that money could buy. He had a rather cushy position, and he had the ability to make money and to accumulate it. But it seems obvious from the text, Zacchaeus realized something's missing. There was a hole there in his heart, in his soul. There was an emptiness in his life. And perhaps Zacchaeus, like so many people of the world today, was searching for an answer, because his passion for money had left him feeling empty. He was not 100% content or happy with his life. You know, there's a lesson here. When we take the whole of what the Scriptures say to us about money. And the truth of the matter is, if we love money, we are sure to be disappointed. If we love money and things, we are sure to be let down. If our faith, our hope, and our trust is in our bank account, or our CDs, or our money markets, or whatever it may be, our houses, and what other material things that we give value to, if that's where our love is, if that's where our heart is, we're bound to be let down. In an instant, those things can disappear. Fire, flood. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, thieves break through and steal. Our material goods corrode and rot and canker. And even if it's insured, well, there's no guarantee that the insurance company won't become insolvent itself. If our hope and our trust and our heart is only in our things and only in our money, we're going to come up empty. We're never going to be content. We're never going to be happy. We're always going to be seeking something as an answer, because the answer is not found in money. I read something not terribly long ago, just in the last week or two, that was a little bit of a, not a comprehensive look at, but it was just a small excerpt of what happens to some of the people who have won the lottery. And this was not a comprehensive look at every individual in the United States over a certain period of time that had won the lottery. This was just, look what happened, and it gave about 10 or 12 people. And these were all people who were of little means and little resources prior to winning the lottery. And they won big. Not just, you know, a $10,000 prize, which would be great and fabulous, but, you know, that's really not going to last you a terribly long time. These are people who won multi-millions of dollars. Not just a few thousand. Multi-millions of dollars. And of the list of the 10 or 12, within 5 to 6 years, every one of them had lost it. And they, this isn't good English, I know, but they were broker afterwards than they were before. Four of them were dead. They were dead because they made deals with the devil. And they got involved in drugs, and they got involved in all kinds of a seditious lifestyle because they had the money to buy into it to start with, but they couldn't maintain it and they couldn't keep it. And they ended up dead. A couple of them were murdered. Several of them had had their money swindled and robbed and taken from them. And the general thought of those who were still living on the list was, I would have been far better off had I never seen a dime of that money. Money and material things will leave you with a big hole in your life if that is all your life is about. Zacchaeus very well could have been and found himself at that point of life. Because the text tells us that he heard Jesus was passing through. Jesus had made no formal announcement of coming to town or anything of that nature. But the text tells us that he wanted to see him, verse 4, because Jesus was coming to pass that way. This is when he climbed up into the tree. But even before that, in verse 3, it says he sought to see who Jesus was. He had heard of him, and he was very curious about him. Perhaps he knew some of the spiritual elements and dynamics of Jesus' life. Who would not have, you know, at least to some certain degree by this point? Maybe Zacchaeus is looking for an answer. And so as we move into a second area here, we think about climbing up. If money was his downfall, let's think about him climbing up. He climbed up into the tree. He was of small stature. He was of little stature. You know, sometimes we say in our prayers, Lord, forgive us for our shortcomings. and someone has said that Zacchaeus was a come shorter. that he had shortcomings, it appears, and so he came shorter. Romans 3:23 tells us that all have fallen short of the glory of God. Why? Because all have sinned. You see, that's our downfall, sin. And we find ourselves in this position of emptiness and loneliness, sadness, seeking who Jesus is. Seeking at least to see him. Because apparently he has some answers and knows some things that might help me. So he climbed the sycamore tree. He climbed up into the tree to see Jesus. Application. Sometimes you must move from where you currently are You may have to climb up. You may have to rearrange some things. But you must, sometimes you must move from where you currently are to get closer to Jesus. Because where you are and the vantage point that you have and the perspective that you have simply is not sufficient. There are too many obstacles. In this case, with Zacchaeus, it was the crowd. Perhaps also it was his money and his heart. And no doubt, when many of those Jews who were credited with the blocking Zacchaeus' view knew that it was Zacchaeus, no doubt some of them may have tried to block him on purpose. He was a despised man. He was not a very well-loved or respected individual. And I can see some in the crowd perhaps taunting this short man that they hated so much. And so finally, he runs ahead of them, and this man of a rather prestigious position in town climbed up in a tree. Not unusual to see a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old up in a tree, but a grown man up in the tree. He climbed up because he knew if he was ever going to get an opportunity to see who Jesus was and to be with Jesus and at least to see him, he was going to have to change his locale. He was going to have to change his perspective. And he was going to have to overcome some obstacles. And sometimes those obstacles may be a little challenging. Sometimes they may be a little unusual, the way that we have to face them and the way that we have to deal with them. But the deal is, the obstacles should not discourage us from getting closer to Jesus. We should be willing, like Zacchaeus, to go to whatever length we need to go to, whatever thing we need to do to move past the impasse, to overcome the obstacle. In Zacchaeus' case, it's climbing a tree. What tree do you need to climb to get closer to Jesus? What tree do I need to climb to get a better perspective to see Jesus? What's blocking my view? What's the obstacle? What's the impasse? What's the problem? Well, I need to recognize it, and like Zacchaeus, run ahead of it and do something different than what I've done before, because what I've been doing before doesn't work too well. Let's change places. Let's change perspective. Let's get a better look. And specifically, let's get a better look at Jesus. And so that would be him climbing up. But now, third in our text, we want to think about one more thing regarding Zacchaeus, and that is that he came down. We talked about it. This is different. The first point is downfall, but this is a different coming down here. He went up the tree, but now he would come down the tree at the request of Jesus. The text tells us that in verse 2, that Zacchaeus was this rich tax collector. In verse 3, he sought to see who Jesus was. You strongly have the implication here that Zacchaeus and Jesus had never met one another. That Zacchaeus had never spoken to Jesus. But because of perhaps this emptiness, this uncertainty in his life, he wanted to be with him. He wanted to at least see him. And what was all the fuss about? What was all the hubbub about? And why was Jesus so very popular? And then here he is in a tree, and Jesus walks by, and he looks up, and he sees him. You know, we may find ourselves having to change places sometimes. We may, whatever tree it is that we need to climb, be assured Jesus will look up and he will see you. And he knows that you're there and that you're dealing with the obstacles. And then Jesus calls him by name. How surprised, perhaps pleasantly, Zacchaeus was to hear this individual that he was so curious about call him by name. You see, Jesus knows your name. And when we find ourselves in those obstacles, when we find ourselves having to deal with situations that challenge us, when we find ourselves seeking a better place and a better perspective to see Jesus, Jesus knows your name. And then I want you to notice the text continues to tell us in verse 5 that Jesus said, "Make haste and come down, for today I must stay or dine at your house." Zacchaeus was delighted, because the next verse tells us that he made haste and he came down and he received him, look at the way it's modified, joyfully. And so we see that he came down and Jesus goes to his house, and there are the usual critics, as the verse tells us in verse 7, when they saw it, they all complained. You know, it's always they. You know, the infamous they. Well, here they are. You know, again, apparently they have ancestors that go back to the beginning of time practically, but at least to the days of Jesus. They saw it, and they complained, the text tells us. They grumbled, you might have a footnote that says, because they said, he's going to be a guest with a man who's a sinner. Well, first of all, can you tell me, what are the options that Jesus have? We're all sinners. He couldn't have eaten with anyone perfect except maybe they. Perhaps they thought they were without sin, and he should have eaten with us. But they didn't realize they also were sinners. And so they complained in their self-righteousness. Zacchaeus, who was not a perfect man either and was a sinner, joyfully though. Look at the contrast. The crowd who's with Jesus the whole way, the crowd who's excited about this, they're complaining, they're grumbling. Zacchaeus, who thought perhaps he was just a bystander and a reject, is joyful. Look at the contrast there. And so when Jesus calls us by name and we then are with him, the reaction ought to be joy in our heart. We might think it would be fear, but it should be joy. Like Zacchaeus, learn something from this man. When you're with Jesus and you let Jesus in your home, you should have joy. And the text then tells us that he came down in haste. How quickly will I do what Jesus asked me to do, like Zacchaeus? Jesus said, "Zacchaeus, do this." And Zacchaeus did it immediately. Zacchaeus did it quickly. Zacchaeus did it with haste. When Jesus asked me to do something and he asked you to do something, how quickly will I respond? How quickly will I do what Jesus says? Is there a hastiness, a positive hastiness? Is there a relentlessness, a quickness to my heart to respond to what Jesus says? Learn something from this man about how we react to what Jesus says when he calls us by name. We've all been there, haven't we, when we've been asked to do something by a superior, whether it be a parent or an employer or otherwise. And we have the best of intentions to do it, but we don't do it right away. We don't do it quickly. And because of our lack of response and the quickness in our lack of response, well, disaster sets in, problems set in, difficulties set in. If only we had listened to the person who asked us to do this quickly and responded in the same Spirit? Quickly. Jesus, our Lord, our Master, asks things of us. How quickly will we respond? And then he came down from that tree and he prepared his time with Jesus. And he went to eat with him. And then we see some marvelous things about Zacchaeus. In fact, someone has said there are five things you can say about Zacchaeus as he's coming down and he's seen Jesus. He's heard his name called by Jesus. He quickly responds to Jesus. He invites Jesus into his house. Something changes in Zacchaeus' life. Something changes in his heart. Something changes in his demeanor. And someone has pointed out there are five things that Zacchaeus opened when he came down. Number one, you notice in verse 6, he opened up his heart to Jesus. Zacchaeus opened his heart. Number two, in verse 7, he opened his home. Zacchaeus opened his home to Jesus. In verse 8, Zacchaeus opened his eyes to the needs of the poor and others. He opened his eyes to the needs of others. Also in verse 8, Zacchaeus opened his wallet. That may be the hardest thing some of us will ever have to open. But Zacchaeus opened his wallet. And fifth, in verse 8 as well, Zacchaeus opened his mouth to tell of his commitment and his resolve to do the right thing. Learn from this man. Open your heart. Open your home. Open your eyes. Open your wallet. And open your mouth with a verbal commitment to do the right thing. And so that's exactly what he did. And the end result, in verse 9 and 10, Jesus says, today, salvation has come to this house. Apparently it had not been there before. But Jesus says, today, it's now here. Zacchaeus had had a terrible downfall, perhaps with his riches. He climbed up, and then he responded to Jesus, and he came down again, but in a very different way. Not in a downfall, but in a way that he opened up all these marvelous things to change his life and to change his perspective. And Jesus tells us, this is what my ministry is all about. I came to seek and to save those who are lost. That is still Jesus' ministry. That is still the point of Jesus' ministry. Seeking and saving the lost. Jesus says, salvation has come to this house. Salvation has come to this man. Salvation has come to this heart. Salvation has come to this life. Salvation has come to this individual. That offer is still good. That offer is still valid. Jesus is still seeking and striving to save the lost. The plans are here. The teachings are here about salvation, about our response to when Jesus calls us by name, in essence, when we rise above and we not only seek, but we have audience with Jesus. We hear, we believe, and we obey. We turn from sins. We are immersed in the name of Jesus. We are added to His church. And Jesus' mission of seeking and saving the lost is fulfilled yet again. Jesus is seeking, and Jesus wants to save. Can He save you tonight? Will you open your heart? Will you open your heart to obey Jesus? He's calling you. He wants to come into your home and He wants to come into your heart. Let Him. Let Him in and obey Him. come tonight as we stand and we sing.